98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata. This is the greatest.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show
really
that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin. Hi, Vinny.
What's up, Bick?
I don't know, man. What you got going on?
You know, it's a Tuesday. It's not Monday, so that's good.
Okay.
You know, we got past that.
Are the Diamondbacks playing today, or are they another day off for them? They are the day off backs, is what they are.
They're back at it today.
Okay, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, like 4 days off in the first month of the season or something.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
4 days off.
That was a pretty good impression right there, Jared.
Thank you.
You've been working on that
one?
I'm
known for my impressions.
I've been working on my chanting Belichick. It's a market I hope to have cornered very soon.
So there was some stuff on social media about offers of free haircuts for you, Carlin. And by the way, the pictures you put out yesterday or we put out, horrifying. Horrifying,
Nightmare
Jared.
Fuel,
that first one, that was the one I took during the show that you said I made a stupid face.
Right, and, you did. I saw it happen in
action.
And
then you admitted it and then denied it.
And then denied it, yeah. So, yes.
I especially like the one where his curl is in his nose. I mean, it's the epitome of maturity.
I'm the epitome of maturity.
You really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But don't get used to it. This is it. The countdown has begun.
Okay.
We're days away from a haircut.
So are you taking up that offer?
Depends. I'm not going to have a listener pay for it. That wouldn't be right. But if we want to make a whole deal out of
let's start a GoFundMe so Jared can get a haircut.
Let's not do that. That's a bad idea.
I think what we need is a contingency. April 26th
or a new producer.
Around,
if I come here NFL draft week when you see me, if I do not have my haircut, you could shave my head.
I'm not getting anywhere near your hair.
Or
I'm
going to
tell you that. I'm just not. The fact that you've got knots in it.
Yeah.
Good luck to whoever inherits this job. You better tip well, Carlin. That's all I got to say. Start the show, freak.
Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
And we start the Splash with a tremendous basketball game in Milwaukee. Suns open up a tough five-game road trip with a 128-127 overtime win over the Bucks. Official Ashley Moyer-Gleish called a foul on Milwaukee's P.J. Tucker with 0.3 seconds to go, sending Devin Booker to the free throw line in a tie game. He made the first, missed the second intentionally to secure the Suns' win. Phoenix had four starters with 20 or more points, including Booker, who had 24. Chris Paul, 22 and 13 assists, moving past Magic Johnson into fifth place on the NBA's all-time assist leaders list. Mikal Bridges, 21, DeAndre Ayton, 20 and 13.
Yeah.
Suns sweep the season series from Milwaukee. Still have not lost back-to-back games since January 27th, a span of 41 contests. Road trip continues tomorrow night in Philadelphia against the 76ers, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I'd feel pretty good about our chances if the Suns meet the Bucks in the NBA Finals. Tell you that much.
The Suns and Bucks usually play really entertaining games, mm-hmm. and the Suns usually win those games.
Yeah.
2 1-point games this year.
Yeah, there's so much to chew on from last night's game. There was so much stuff that happened that it, to me, is conversation worthy. Can't wait to get into it.
Yep. Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors continued his remarkable play last night. He hit 10 three-pointers, scored 20 of his 49 points in the fourth. The Warriors took down Philadelphia 107-96 in Philly. Curry's fifth 40-point game this month. He's hit 10 or more threes in four of his last five contests. Golden State has won five out of its last six, back at 500 as they jockey for a playoff position. Right now, they are 29-29. Steph Curry is on a different planet right now for Golden State, when they need him the most.
Yeah, it is really something to watch. I mean, he's already acclaimed as the greatest shooter of all time, and he's never been this good. I mean, his statistics are just mind-boggling.
Maybe they should have been leaning on him more heavily in the beginning of the year, and don't let Kelly Oubre Jr. shoot the ball.
That's a good point.
D-backs continue their road trip tonight in Cincinnati against the Reds after a day off yesterday. Snakes coming off splitting a four-game series in Washington to face Cincinnati, who beat the D-backs 2 out of 3 in Arizona 2 weekends ago. Tonight, it's Zach Gallen on the mound for the D-backs. He'll be faced by right-hander Luis Castillo. The game gets underway at 3:40 Arizona time. Pre-game coverage starts at 3 on ESPN 6:20 a.m. So we'll see if they can carry a little bit of momentum into this next series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, you know, and that's because I think what we saw the last weekend gives you reason. Maybe they can climb back and hover around 500, which is not a bad thing to aspire to. So I'll remain cautiously optimistic.
All right, that's fair enough. Coyotes lose to the Wild 5-2 at Gila River Arena. Arizona allowed two more power play goals as their penalty kill unit continues to struggle. The Yotes have allowed 7 power play goals in 11 opportunities for opponents over the last four games. And Minnesota continues. The Suns own Milwaukee. Minnesota owns the Coyotes. 22-5-3 in their last 30 games between the two teams. 6-1 this year. And they've outscored the Yotes 28-11. The bad news is they got one more game left this season, and that'll be tomorrow night. 6:00 at Gila River Arena in Glendale. But the Yotes still fourth in the West Division, 1 point better than St. Louis for the last playoff spot. Only 10 games left in the regular season.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
No, I really can't.
Talk about crunching a condensing schedules. The NHL has done that.
No doubt.
Arizona Cardinals re-signed linebacker and special team standout Ezekiel Turner to a 1-year tender deal yesterday. Good news for the special teams. Former ASU guard Holland Woods made it official. He's transferring to GCU to finish his college career. He averaged 6.7 points in 25 games for ASU last year, and he joins Tayshaun Cherry as former Sun Devils, who will wear the GCU purple next year. Arizona getting a transfer, along with Gonzaga head coach Tommy Lloyd. He's bringing a transfer along with him. Umar Bayo or Balo, I don't know how you pronounce it. He's originally from Mali, but he's committed.
Okay.
He's a big 260-pound center.
Okay.
Yeah, so the roster construction begins for Tommy Lloyd.
There you go.
I don't know why. The Splash has been way short the last couple
days. Oh, my goodness.
I know, right? What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. What's on your mind? What'd you do? Anything fun? Fun, new, and exciting with you, Vinny?
Just sitting on pins and needles watching NBA basketball last night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In terms of the NBA, we're getting to that stage now where there's a lot of good stuff being created on a nightly basis. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The Steph Curry thing is really starting to shine. The Memphis Grizzlies are playing serious basketball right now.
They have a lot of talent on that.
As a team that's going to be right around that 7 or 8 thing, they gave the Nuggets all they could handle. That game went to double overtime. They had beaten the Bucks over the weekend.
The Bucks have lost like 5 games in a row at home.
Well, I think last night's game is why some people in the NBA are kind of looking at Giannis and those MVPs and going, really?
You might be onto something. We might elaborate on that.
We might hear
in a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
The number one baseball video game returns. It's MLB The Show 21. Enter to win a copy on PlayStation or for the first time ever on Xbox. Head to the contest page at ArizonaSports.com now for your chance to win. Yes, Suns do win. Bounce back after their worst loss of the season in Milwaukee. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ok Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
35 feet from the basket. 5 seconds left. Booker starts to make his way towards the basket. Turns, spins, down to 2. He's going to have to force up a fadeaway shot from the right baseline. And a whistle and a foul is called on the shot. The shot did not go, but Booker is headed to the free throw line with a chance to give the Suns the overtime victory.
That's the play everybody's talking about from last night. And Devin Booker did go to the free throw line with 3/10 of a second to go in overtime. He knocked down one, missed the second on purpose, and the Suns escaped Milwaukee with an overtime win in a very entertaining basketball game last night. And just reading some of the reaction nationally, Bic, about, that's not really a foul. And I was like, yeah, it is a foul. It was clearly a foul. P.J. Tucker made a horrible tactical determination there because Drew Holiday was doing just fine on his own defensively. And had there been no contact, that shot attempt wouldn't have even counted because it came after the buzzer. But the foul came before the buzzer, and that it lost the game for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Listen, Devin Booker said that you could hear the slap. It was that loud.
Yeah, here was Booker after the game.
Yeah, I was just trying to get the last shot. Obviously, we were trying to get a switch. Late, but the time was going down, and I just try to get to a spot and get one up, and then there was a foul. Make the first one, and don't give him a chance and miss the second.
And about the foul itself,
I was pretty confident. Watching it on the screen, I think they had a bad angle, but I don't think anybody was arguing if it was a foul or not. I think they're seeing if the foul happened before or after the horn. It was a smack across the wrist that was very loud, and the ref made the right call.
All right, the big story here is not whether or not it was a foul. The big story here is that Devin Booker got the foul, got a call in a situation like that, because the situation has been flipped, and we know that. We've seen that. There have been games when he's been fouled and hasn't gotten the call. And so that, it might have been a long-awaited show of respect. Like you said, that was really, really a dumb play by P.J. Tucker. And that game featured some real defensive lapses near the end of regulation and in overtime.
Oh, I mean,
the Suns leaving Chris Middleton open. There was a lot of mental errors out there defensively, and they didn't come from DeAndre Ayton.
How about the lapse defensively by Milwaukee to let Booker leak out on the assist from Chris Paul for the dunk that put him past Magic Johnson? On that list.
I'll tell you this, that single play that you just talked about, that is my favorite play, I believe, of the Sun season.
Really?
Yeah. That play, a rebound by Ayton, a pass to Chris Paul, a pass to Devin Booker, and a dunk without even dribbling the ball once. I love that stuff. Breakout dunks after a missed three, that is just smoking a team in transition. If your guy shoots a three and they dunk on you going back the other way, that is a defensive lapse in transition, and I loved it. It was fabulous. So, yeah, there are a lot to come out of that game. The fact that Devin Booker got that call on a play that looked anything but convincing. If he doesn't get that call and the Suns lose that game in double overtime, we'd be having a conversation about what's going on with D-Book at the end of these games.
I think you're right. I think Suns fans were poised had they lost that game, had Devin Booker not got that call. There was a call that went against them in regulation that was a curious call, and that was this.
Giannis on the dribble, 14 on the shot clock. He has it in between the circles. Ayton's given him about 15 feet of space. Giannis still on the dribble, down to 6 to shoot. Right-hand dribble beyond the arc. Starts to penetrate. He fell to the floor. Lost his footing. No call. Should be a travel. Finally a whistle. And
you
they're going to give the Bucks a timeout.
You can't give him a timeout. The ball was loose.
Giannis Antetokounmpo on the dribble drive fell to the floor with the ball in his hands, and they did not whistle a travel. They instead give the Bucks a timeout with 1 second on the shot clock. Chris Paul is beside himself. So is Monty Williams. Not only did he fall with the dribble, he rolled on the floor with the ball. Oh, I can't even explain it.
That's John Bloom and Tim Kempton on the call. The reaction from the Suns players on the floor, you can gauge how bad a call is in real time just by that. And Rodney Mott, the crew chief, made that call, and he was confident about it. It's one of the worst calls I've seen all year. It really is.
Yeah,
it
pretty bad.
Now, it didn't affect the outcome of the game ultimately, which was a good thing for the Suns. But you're right. Devin Booker getting a whistle in that instance. And one of the things I don't like about pandemic basketball, have you noticed this too? It's really hard to hear whistles on television broadcast these days. Did you notice that? I didn't hear a whistle on that play.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a...
It was never, even in full arenas, I don't know if they mic'd the court differently or how it was set up, but it took a few seconds watching that game. I was like, all right, they're going overtime.
Okay.
Double overtime.
Okay.
And then hey, he's going to the free throw line. That's just a pet peeve of mine.
Okay.
It's something that I've noticed. But that is significant because there were plays in that game, too, that Devin Booker, and there's plays every game where players of his stature, his quality, they do get a lot of calls. And for him to get one in the end game situation, that is big for this
team.
Yeah,
obviously the Bucks were not very, very happy about it, but it does kind of sound like P.J. Tucker knows that he really messed that up because he did not need to help at all. And that to me is one of the takeaways in this whole thing. I thought D.A. did an exemplary job defensively. I thought that shoulder stinger situation was a very bizarre thing to watch. I mean, generally, if a guy's in that much pain, the head coach comes and rescues him and calls timeout. Because it looked like his shoulder was dislocated, the way he was grimacing and the arm is hanging at his side.
Mm-hmm. It was strange. I expected there to be a timeout called, but there was only one timeout remaining.
Mm-hmm.
To Monty's credit, maybe they knew, maybe they communicated, hey, I can shake this off, but it looked like
there was any communicating going on.
At one point, I don't know if it was Eddie Johnson or K-Ray on the television broadcast said the Suns are basically playing 4-on-5
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, and that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was a very, very odd visual. Whether that was Monty choosing, I got to save this timeout at the expense of my guy, or not thinking his guy was that hurt, or wanting his guy to grind through something like that. There were times near the end of the game last night where I thought DeAndre was starting to look fatigued.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to check out mentally a little bit, and he didn't. At least defensively, he didn't. And that was a significant step. This is going to be tough for him because there's a lot of basketball games coming in a short period of time, mm-hmm. and they're going to all feel like this.
About the decision to keep the game going when the shoulder injury occurred, here was DeAndre Ayton on that.
You know, throughout the game, when I got hit, I didn't know where I was at first. It got to me a little bit, but, you know, a game like this, you know, it's just a playoff-like game. You know, it's going to be hard. This is the NBA, and, you know, you can't really stop or pause for any type of scratches, and I'm glad coach didn't stop the game or call a timeout. You know, made me play through it, and I figured my way out. And you know, my teammates was there for me, and everybody was talking to me. And, you know, like I said, it's just our culture being relentless, and you know, that's what kicked in, and it was an important evening.
Yeah, we asked the question yesterday. We asked this question a lot after a Suns loss. How does this team respond?
Mm-hmm.
Quite well. Monty Williams talked about it being a growth game.
Giannis, you know, just attacking the basket. Over and over again and scoring on good defense, but we stayed with it. And even when Chris hit that shot, we didn't buckle at all. And so a great growth moment for us. And obviously it's just cool to get a win and really cool to see Chris, you know, pass Magic Johnson and all-time assist. I think he's fifth now, which is absurd. So just a really cool night.
Yeah, and it's not going to be long into next year that Chris mm-hmm. Paul will be third on that all-time list because he's going to pass the next two, including Steve Nash, on the list very soon.
Uh-huh.
It was exactly the type of game that the Suns needed.
No doubt.
It was close. It looked like the Bucks were going to pull away.
It was emotional.
Yeah, somebody we haven't talked about that I thought really had an important stretch offensively to keep the Suns in the game was Cameron Payne off the bench.
I thought Mikal Bridges hit some huge shots as well.
He did. Change in the starting lineup. We'll get into mm-hmm. that a little bit later mm-hmm. on. But exactly what the doctor ordered for the Phoenix Suns to get win number 41 against a good basketball team. Now, it didn't hurt that Giannis cramped up in overtime and missed the last 4 minutes of overtime.
Imagine if that was DA. Imagine if that was flipped. Do you know how soft that looks for Giannis to miss the final, to fall down on a game-winning drive?
Mm-hmm.
Trip over your own feet.
Get lucky with a call.
Right. Get lucky with the call and then tap out with 4 minutes left in overtime because of a cramp. Now, I'm not disputing the cramp, but when that happens in those key moments and it sidelines you, it's not a good look.
I totally agree. I expected him to miss a little bit of time, but to miss the rest of the overtime?
Yeah.
We've all had cramps before.
Oh, my cramp. Oh, my leg. Oh, yeah.
It's cramping.
Yes. You get older, you wake up with them, and isn't that special?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Suns' magic number now is zero.
So we are assured of a playoff berth right now?
At least the play-in. At least 10. They cannot get any lower than 10 now.
So do we celebrate that?
How defeatist is even... I heard Burns and Gambo talking about that yesterday. I almost drove off the road. Is that what we're striving for now? If they lose the rest of their games, they're still in? Have a goal, people!
It's still significant, though, since
it's
been 10 years!
Oh, my goodness.
Well, but now, if we're really in, we should set off some balloons or something, right? If the 10-year drought is over...
I think that
should be some party horns and hats.
I think the real significant thing would be when they clinch at least the sixth seed.
So they're not in the 7-10 forest. Okay.
Are the people that are making a big deal of this the kind of people that celebrate half birthdays too? You celebrate your 6-month birthday.
What a party pooper.
Yeah, no, I have goals, Jarrett. You should look into it sometime.
What kind of pooper are you?
Coming up, we'll get into some NFL talk and an interesting interplay between two star quarterbacks in the league. Straight ahead, Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Hey, getting closer to the draft, so pretty much every headline is somewhat draft-related, but there is some stuff out there league-wide that is of interest. We'll get into all of it here. First, contract extension for Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin through 2024. Art Rooney, the second Steelers president, said, "I am pleased to announce we have extended Mike Tomlin's contract through the 2024 season. Mike is one of the most successful head coaches in the National Football League and more confident in his leadership to continue to lead our team as we work to win another championship." I gotta say this, in terms of sports, occupation, job security, it's pretty good being the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach. They don't have very many of them.
No, and I love that methodology. It's the reason why this is working, because Mike Tomlin has remained relatable to his players. His voice hasn't gotten stale, if you will. But I've always thought that that these franchises that resist the churn of head coaches all the time, when you get a head coach that you really like, that fits your organization, I love the idea of rolling with them through the valleys. Like, if you've got to replace a franchise quarterback, you really like your head coach, but say a Ben Roethlisberger retires, and you go through a valley that you know has nothing to do with the head coach, but you resist firing the head coach because he isn't winning games anymore, because you understand the vagaries of the NFL.
But that's what's remarkable about Pittsburgh as an organization is, in this run where they've had these three coaches starting in 1969 with Chuck Knoll, it was a different time then. So when he took over, the Steelers were garbage. They went 1-13, 5-9, 6-8. Then they jumped up to 11-3, and that started the ball rolling. So there wasn't the pressure to fire coaches, but from Knoll to Cowher to Tomlin, when they have rough patches, it's like a one-season rough patch, and it's usually right around 500.
Yeah,
so I don't know if the continuity builds the culture or the culture influences the continuity.
Right.
It's probably a little bit of both. It's an amazing situation.
It really
doesn't get talked about
enough. I really admire it, because at one point in time, I thought Mike Tomlin had his strengths, and I thought he had definitive weaknesses. He'd always easy fodder against Bill Belichick because it just never seemed he adjusted anything. Yet he's got a real consistency that players vibe with and a way of communicating that players vibe with, and the organization has rewarded that. And I like that method. I like the idea, the message you send, that if you've got a really good head coach, you ride with them through the bad times.
And the bad times for Pittsburgh under Tomlin, he's had 3-8-8 seasons. That's as bad as
never
it's got.
Had a losing season.
But there, you could see an owner that would be like, even with these good seasons, even with, let's say, the way the season went last year, where they started great and finished not great at all, they'd say, okay, we sort of plateaued with Tomlin as coach.
Yeah,
he's not sort of, you know, he's sort of under, even though he's doing well, he's still underachieving with all the talent he has. It's time to sort of move on. And but they don't do that there.
You're right, because they you know, they won 13 games in 2017, then they won 9, then they won 8. They missed the playoffs two straight years. We know what the standard is in Pittsburgh, so there is a level of patience that other organizations don't show. That for an organization as successful as they are to miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, I think other organizations in similar situations might say, "All right, enough's enough."
So and last year was what they started 11-0,
and they finished 12-4,
and then they lost to the Browns.
Yeah.
In the playoffs,
yeah, no, which... listen, they had the yin and the yang all in one season. They at one point were going for immortality in an unbeaten season. The next minute, they couldn't beat anybody, and they were a fast out in the playoffs.
Yep.
Yeah. That to me, that's the kind of thing that'll shake up a fan base. And that's why I think it's even more poignant that they do this.
There's a great Twitter exchange going on between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. This is in response to a tweet from the Kansas City Royals. There's batting practice footage of Salvador Perez coming out of the cage wearing a Tom Brady number 12 Buccaneers jersey. And as the camera is on him, he looks at the camera and he kind of defiantly says, "Patrick Mahomes is the best." And the Royals caption said, "Sometimes words speak more than actions." I'm assuming Perez lost a bet.
Something must have happened.
Yeah.
Because Perez says on camera something about he's not better than Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And then Tom Brady responds to the Royals and says, "Nah, I think actions always speak louder than words," with a kind of a smiley face and a wink. Patrick Mahomes responds, "I guess we will see in 20 years."
Now, this to me is unbelievable because, all right, this is Tom Brady jumping into a conversation that he doesn't need to jump into, right? So what? A baseball player's pimping his jersey, but then calling Patrick Mahomes the greatest of all time. You can let that go.
Patrick Mahomes, by the way, who is part owner of the Royals.
Yes. This could be Salvador Perez just sucking up to one of the owners. Which is not a bad strategy, let's be honest.
Okay, right. No, there's no doubt. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to get chained to the end of the bench.
We know Mahomes wields a lot of power in that front office.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so Tom Brady jumps in just to kind of wink, wink. "Don't you remember what I just did? Wink, wink." And then Patrick Mahomes, "Well, we'll see about your record in 20 years.
See,
to me is fabulous.
I don't have any problem with Tom Brady jumping into that.
No, I don't have I wouldn't say a problem with it, but I do think that Tom Brady wasn't expecting I don't think he was expecting Patrick Mahomes to jump in.
Yeah.
So, and again, this is, to me, one of my favorite stories is what are the psychological effects of this madman Tom Brady and his pursuit of rings and what it's doing to the entire profession. Aaron Rodgers, right? Very agitated the last couple of years. Russell Wilson is a different guy, completely different guy. Patrick Mahomes not showing any deference and going, "Yeah, well, we'll see in 20 years." That's fabulous. That is just great.
I'm looking forward to that matchup in 20 years.
Yeah, right. Brady will be 65.
Tom Brady
will be
65.
Yeah.
Brady takes the shotgun snap, adjusts the walker, shifts left. Adjusts the walker, now he rolls to his right.
"Oh, it's his hip! His hip! It's broken!"
That's right. He's fallen, and he can't get up!
The hardest working quarterback in football right now is Jameis Winston, at least according to his own claims.
Yeah.
He had some pretty open and honest quotes about his pursuit of the Saints' starting quarterback position now that Drew Brees is retired. He said, quote, in a publication, quote, "I went from being the number one draft pick to everybody laughing at me. But guess what? I'm about that business. I'm outworking everyone at my position. I know Dak Prescott is right there. I'm doing things every single day, committing to the dream, because that's the thing. We have to go back to being little kids about this football game. This is a kid's game that men play. I encourage each and every one of you to have faith in yourself above any coach, any teammate, any friend that you have. Some days you're on top of the world, but only God and yourself know what you're going through. Trust in the Lord first and foremost, then trust in yourself." Oh, and by the way, we're going to eat that W. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
But I was the number one overall pick to everybody laughing at me. You can't fault the attitude and the work ethic of Jameis Winston.
Right. You're right. You can question his decisions in late games.
Well,
and
sure, but I mean,
passes that sail over the heads of wide receivers.
A lot of guys
question a lot of that stuff.
A lot of guys in that position, once you know, if you're that highly touted, the number one overall pick, you're a starter from day one with your organization, and then that comes to an end, and you're a backup. I mean, a lot of guys call it, you know, not call it a career, but kind of call it quits on pursuing another starting job. I like the attitude.
Yeah,
I don't
so
know
why.
I just don't know if he can overcome those turnover issues.
I'm really desensitized to football players talking how they've never worked harder. You hear it from 98% of them every single year. And maybe it's from all our training camp coverage, but every interview you do, you get the same stuff. And not that the football players aren't feeling it. They probably have put in a ton of work. But you hear that all the time. It's about results on the field. Yeah. And how you get them, that's up to you.
We didn't get into this yesterday, but I want to mention it right here.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams unveiling their draft mansion, which a lot of people think is a response to the Cliff Kingsbury draft setup. Even the house looks, there was a room in the house that they pictured, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage. looks eerily similar to Cliff Kingsbury's living room.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. It's still different draft tactics being used by these teams.
Yeah.
I hope the Cardinals don't do anything to respond. Concentrate on football. Concentrate on the
that
process.
That went so viral last year, though.
I know.
Yeah, now
I just don't think it's the kind of messaging you need to attach your head coach to right now. This has got to be about business, not about Coach Bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. It would be a bad look to try to get involved with this. Oh, no, our coach is actually cooler than yours. Are you surprised that an L.A. team would want to flex like that and say, hey, we're cooler than you, Arizona? Doesn't surprise me at all that they did that.
No. Plus, they have bragging rights, too.
Well, they do. They do. But I'm with you. I wouldn't engage in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have Cliff at the
facility. Like Jameis Winston. Be all about that business.
Coming up next, Patrick Peterson has officially said goodbye to Arizona in a Players Tribune article. Where does he rank on the list of all-time great Arizona Cardinals? We'll explore it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Modern technology can record the voice of the people with the utmost precision.
You're insane. You're insane.
I'm insane?
You're insane. You're insane.
You're a weird guy, Ace. Weird guy.
Bickley and Murata. 98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station.
No, not really, because I know I haven't played my last game of football, you know, so at the end of the day, like I said, I know it's business. Whatever happens in March or April, whenever that time comes, that's what it's going to be. You know what I mean? I know I got to have some decisions to make for me and my family and my career and my future. And, you know, I'm going to have, you know, some time over the next 2 or 3 months to really sit down and think about some things. And like I said, we'll see what happens.
That's Patrick Peterson back on January 5th, an episode of All Things Covered podcast that he does with Bryant McFadden, talking about the possibility that he could have played his last game as an Arizona Cardinal. As the offseason continued, we found out that to be the case. He signed a free agent deal with the Minnesota Vikings this morning on the Players Tribune. A very lengthy goodbye, just entitled Legacy, written by Patrick Peterson. Appeared. It was a pretty interesting read.
Yep.
Early on, he says, am I surprised to be leaving? A little bit. I'm not going to lie. But I wasn't taken aback by it, if that makes sense. I've been with this team for 10 years, so I've seen different versions of my situation play out with other high-profile players many times. If you're at the end of your contract and you haven't gotten another one before the season's over, 9 times out of 10, you're going to walk. Nothing against anyone. That's just the way this business works. So I'd already had it in the back of my mind that I was going to be pulling on a different jersey come September. I had already been mentally preparing. But he went back and he shared some memories. Mm-hmm. He went through, you know, the 2014 season when he had the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, which was weird in real time. He talked about how he ballooned up to close to 230 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, we definitely noticed things at that time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a story then. The uncovering of the type 2 diabetes was a watershed moment in Patrick Peterson's history here.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point in time, he was... I like the fact, though, the one part about that story that I really liked is... His ghost-written story in the Players Tribune was that, was being called into Bruce Arians' room and BA's kind of giving him the hairy eyeball. Like, you've been partying, man? Because I know what it looks like, right?
Yeah.
And coach, no, I swear, we're trying to get to the bottom of this. But Arians is like, And then they found out it was type 2 diabetes. They got it fixed. He got down into great shape and off they went. It kind of glossed over the PED suspension.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Talked about how hard it was, and he was crying himself to sleep at night. And it's like, well, how did you get up into that situation?
That's one area where we never got really much detail at all.
No.
Got a lot of detail on the diabetic situation.
We sure did.
Yeah, it was an interesting read, so I would suggest Cardinal fans check it out. And I think
it was a nice gesture. It was what I really liked about it is that Patrick went into great detail. And it's very lengthy, but that's, in this situation, that's a good thing. That means he really is attached to this area. So, yeah, I thought it was cool.
And I think, too, the title, the one word, legacy, is a perfect title for this because, you know, we've seen a lot of players come and go with the Arizona Cardinals. Not many players as great as Patrick Peterson, but I think that word legacy is a very complicated one when it comes to what he leaves behind and how fans think of him. I think there was a time where he was among the most popular Cardinals players. He was, you know, ebullient, very outgoing, friendly with the media. Then you had the PED suspension, you had decreased play, you had trade demands. I mean, it's a very, very complicated thing that
he
leaves behind
at the end. And he admitted in the piece that the smile left his face, and that was a shame to see. There was a time when covering Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu was an absolute joy because of just their demeanors, and that kind of got away from Tyrann Mathieu at the end of his stay in Arizona, and it got away from Patrick Peterson. It's not always a happy business.
So,
but I wish him well in Minnesota. I really, really do. I think he, at his best, he was tremendously entertaining. He sparked the imagination. He made you think anything was possible. Nobody could have ever lived up to that rookie year that he posted in Arizona. But, you know, I'll remember him fondly. Ring of Honor player for certain.
Oh, absolutely. So I started thinking about, you know, where he would rank on a list of all-time great Cardinals. Not prior to 88, so since they've been in Arizona. And I won't bury the lead here. I've got him fourth on the list.
Wow.
You think that's low?
I think that's high.
Do you?
Well, I mean...
you want to hear my top 10?
No, is this... Okay, is this a top 10 list of who you think the best Cardinals are or your favorite Cardinals?
The best.
Okay.
The greatest.
Okay, then maybe it is.
The best Arizona Cardinals.
Honorable mention to Darnell Dockett, Luis Sharp, Jake Plummer, Buda Baker, Carlos Dansby.
All right.
Number 10, Calais Campbell.
Okay.
Number 9, Larry Centers.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, Carson Palmer.
Okay.
7, Chandler Jones. 6, Anquan Boldin. 5, Adrian Wilson. Peterson, 4. Kurt Warner, 3. Aeneas Williams, 2. Larry Fitzgerald, 1.
I think I would have...
Open for debate, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
I think Kurt Warner ranks above Aeneas Williams in my book. And I think Adrian Wilson's ranked too high.
At 5?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have who above
him? Put Anquan Boldin ahead of him?
Yes, I might... Yes, I would. I'd put Boldin. Yes. But again, just nitpicking.
Yeah.
Adrian Wilson had 20 sacks and 20 interceptions, which is something that has never or rarely been done before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a short list of players.
Yeah. He was terrific. Yeah. I'm just nitpicking.
The point on Aeneas Williams, I think a lot of people will agree with your point. My argument is this. Aeneas Williams played on some just lousy Cardinals teams. He ended up in the Hall of Fame. And even so, I think in my lifetime, he's the most underrated NFL player I've ever seen.
Wow.
He did not have a dip in his performance ever in a Cardinals uniform.
Yeah. And it was a shame that he never got to play in really big games. Yeah, because when
he did, one playoff run.
Well, I mean, it was the one thing that scared the Cowboys. I mean, when the Cowboys would roll into Sun Devil Stadium, it was Michael Irvin on Aeneas Williams. Oh. It was the one matchup they couldn't win. So, yeah, Bertrand Berry might deserve somewhere.
Honorable mention,
honorable
sure.
mention, yeah.
It's yeah. tough because
Tyrann Mathieu, honorable mention.
Mm-hmm.
There really is a, you know, Larry is so obviously the number one. Anybody else really in that top five you mentioned, you could argue as the second best. Because like Kurt Warner was not here very, what was he here, 3 years where he started?
Five.
Yeah, he was here longer than 3 years.
Oh, okay. But, all right, never mind then. the 3 years, you know.
But the impact in the short amount of time. I mean, if you were going to do a similar exercise for the Phoenix Suns, Charles Barkley played 4 seasons for the Suns,
mm-hmm.
one of the greatest players they've ever had, because of the impact he had while he was here.
Yeah.
A lot of the same ingredients for Kurt Warner, in my opinion.
Well, think about what Kurt Warner did. Kurt Warner has this rags-to-riches story in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams win a Super Bowl. They go to another one. He's on the cover of Wheaties boxes in St. Louis. He gets injured, and then suddenly he gets traded to New York. Okay, so his career is going to start there. Midway through the season, they decide, you know what, we got to start Eli Manning. So now the job gets yanked from him there. So now this is one of the greatest stories in the history of the NFL now, and he's been booted out of two organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes to Arizona and thinks he's got another start, and then Matt Leinart gets drafted. And then Matt Leinart gets given the job, handed the job. And through all that time, I always marveled that Kurt Warner never once did anything but be the best teammate he could be to Matt Leinart.
Mm-hmm.
Never withheld anything, never tried to work the room against the incumbent, even though he had effectively been ripped out of the starting lineup in 3 successive places.
Mm-hmm.
That's what still sort of surprises me about him retiring when and the way he did,
mm-hmm.
is because he, first of all, started his NFL career sort of later than most people. Then his actual... Hold on. All right, it's here. But I can't... I don't know what to do here.
Shut your microphone off. Is that the emergency line?
Arizona Sports.
Your mic's on, Jarrett.
Nobody was even there. Anyway, the fact that he had such his windows for being the starter and being in his prime at certain places were so short that he was still playing at an elite level when he retired. You figure he had such short windows throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he had, you know, he played for a long time, but he didn't play as the elite starter for a long time, and he was still that when he retired, which you think he would have held on until he really
didn't.
Well,
if you do remember that playoff loss against the Saints, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And that offensive line wasn't going to look any better the following year. Yeah. That was...
And it didn't.
I think it was self-preservation time.
Yes.
Is what that was.
It was. Yeah, up for debate. I just thought it was, because I had wondered about Patrick Peterson, where he would land on that list, especially after the last few years, not being the most popular guy in town. But, suggest you read that piece on the Players Tribune. Coming up next, Suns get a big win against Milwaukee and another accolade for the point guard. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.